work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Can I get a weight reading on the cat in exam 3?
Zuri needs a new vet tech after their current one literally moved to a farm. But finding an ideal replacement takes some training.
This is like herding cats.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Schedule virtual interviews and talk to candidates right from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh.
Can I use it where my bra rubs under my... Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Hey, Joe Montana here. Back in my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia, a bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older, or 19 or older with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, you're at increased risk. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
A program meant to fight alcohol abuse seems to be having an extra benefit. It keeps reducing child abuse and neglect, even 7 years after it started. Now, experts want to make it even more effective. With the story, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. The program that researchers studied is called SNAP, short for Sacramento Neighborhood Alcohol Prevention Project. That's in Sacramento, California. Joining us now is Bridget Freisteller, lead author of the study and professor of social work at The Ohio State University. Professor, you're quoted as saying, after officials launched SNAP, the rates of child abuse and neglect kept decreasing in one area of town, and in another area, the increases have stopped. Can you put some numbers to these results for us?
Sure. The intervention was implemented in both the north and south area in Sacramento. In the north area, after 7 years, we still saw an 11.8% reduction in entries into foster care and an 11.2% reduction of those entries in foster care that were specifically alcohol related. Whereas in South, in the earlier study, when we looked immediately post-intervention, we had seen some increases. Those are no longer significant. So there's no change in the South area.
So does that mean you infer that there's less child abuse and neglect based upon the entries into foster care?
Yes. Children enter in foster care usually due to child abuse and neglect. So what happens is there'll be an investigation. And if the investigation suggests that abuse or neglect happened, there'll be something called substantiation. Then in that case, the caseworkers will determine whether or not a child is at immediate risk for continued harm, in which case they may remove them from the home and place them in foster care, either with a kin, a family member, or with a stranger.
Can you characterize how big a deal it is for the health and safety of children that you've found these results?
Absolutely. What's interesting is child abuse and neglect has been one of those wicked problems that we've had a really hard time moving the needle in some aspects. We're continuing to see increases now since COVID and in the post-COVID time period. Most of our interventions really work on addressing problems within the family. So in the case of substance use, it would be about how do we get parents into treatment so they're no longer misusing alcohol and can be better parents. However, this study is much different because what it does is it says, let's look at how available alcohol is in the community and let's make changes to make it a little bit more difficult for people to get that alcohol. And by doing that, you make changes in behavior, you know, for a group of people that then have resulted in these reductions. These types of environmental interventions like we did in SNAP are much more able to be sustained long term. in a way that often individual treatment for substance use is not, because we know that that's characterized by periods of sort of relapse and recovery.
And we should point out that SNAP was actually designed to reduce alcohol supply to the area, not necessarily aimed at decreasing child abuse and neglect, kind of a side benefit. But you especially were focused on those 15 to 29-year-olds and people who already drink too much. So drill down for us, Professor. What sort of specific tactics did they use?
Yep. We had five different intervention components. And one, it was really around community mobilization. So getting key leaders from the community invested in the project and to really act as a community advisory board for us as we were implementing the other interventions. We had a community awareness component, and that was really designed to bring awareness to the people living in those neighborhoods about the extent of alcohol problems among their youth aged 15 to 29. Then we had responsible beverage service, and this is a strategy designed to work with those places that sell alcohol in a restaurant or a bar setting. It's about making sure you keep track of how many drinks a person has. And in a retail setting where they're taking alcohol to go, it might be looking for things like fake IDs and people who might be purchasing alcohol that might not be old enough. And then there were two different enforcement strategies. One of those were basically sting operations to send in underage youth to these different retail establishments to see if they were being sold alcohol, even though they were underage. And the second was about not selling alcohol to intoxicated patrons.
We're visiting with Bridget Freisteller, professor of social work at The Ohio State University. This concerns a study on a program to reduce alcohol supply in two sections of a town and the positives that followed. The study is published in the journal Drug and Alcohol Review. So let's turn to the overall approach once again. Now, the study strongly makes the point that SNAP was community-based. Does this mean that local officials had a hand in tailoring the program, and was that important to its success?
We did work very closely with the two neighborhood areas. In both of those areas, we actually had a nonprofit agency that was the lead in the neighborhood. And so one of the reasons we did that is because the neighborhoods had very distinct racial and ethnic and economic diversity in them. So we wanted to make sure that we were introducing these interventions that would be relevant to the folks that lived there. And so they housed individuals who worked on the project, and they also provided feedback all along on the project's activities.
Let me pick up again on your comments about responsible beverage service, because aren't there studies showing that where a person drinks makes a difference? So, for instance, drinking in bars is related to greater use of physical abuse?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that we've been looking at for the past 10 to 15 years now. And it's really interesting. You see where people drink related to, as you said, different social problems. So if you're drinking at a bar, you're more likely to drink and drive than, say, if you're drinking at home for obvious reasons. And so with respect to child abuse, we really see that bar environment is risky for parents using physical abuse. And we've been trying to drill down a little bit to figure out what is it? Is it something about, you know, the amount that you drink at a bar that might make you more aggressive? Is it something about the bar environment itself? You know, people being aggressive, talking loudly to each other, things like that. Because if we can identify those places, then we can start to tailor more specific interventions to address some of these social problems. You know, we feel really fortunate that this overall intervention had a reduction for child abuse and neglect. But the thought is, could we be even more effective if we're able to really focus on those mechanisms that happen in those bars, restaurants, and off-premise outlets that sell alcohol?
And not just those that you specifically mentioned, but also people who drink frequently at sporting events. And what about that as a strategy for trying to bring down the attacks on children?
Absolutely. In other recent work, we found that people who drank on the day of the Super Bowl are much more likely to use harsh discipline strategies. Whereas if you're drinking on Valentine's Day, you're not going to use those harsh discipline. And so again, what's the context? We've been looking again, who are the people that are with them? Are you entertaining? Is someone taking care of the children? You know, what are the conditions that make it so parents are more likely to engage in harsh parenting and aggressive discipline? Parenting practices that we would like them to do much less of. In our study of drinking in sports, it was mostly mothers. it was really mothers who were doing the harsh discipline and not fathers, which I think is very new for this type of work. And so as we start to figure this out and these things all fit together, the hope is that we'll be able to say these are some of the strategies at the community level and then also at the individual level that might reduce child abuse and neglect.
Professor, do you believe that communities around the country should now adopt the SNAP model? Are we there yet?
I don't think we're there yet. I think we need to do a bit more testing of these environmental interventions. The great news is, across the U.S., lots of communities are already engaging in these environmental intervention and prevention efforts. What's really needed is to look at these efforts, make sure we're monitoring those, the evaluations of them, but including child abuse and neglect data with it. Those data have been notoriously hard for researchers to get. States are uncomfortable sharing this data because you're really talking about some of the most vulnerable children in our society. And so what I'm hoping is that as we have results like this, that we'll be able to get more access to those data and we can evaluate those environmental interventions for child abuse and neglect and start to build a stronger research base for it.
Bridget Freisteller, professor of social work at The Ohio State University, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your study.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, getting all Americans the benefits they deserve. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
This week at Macy's, shop incredible specials on what you need now, like 65% off warm and stylish coats for her, and 40 to 50% off shoes, handbags, and accessories to complete your look. Plus, take 15 to 60% off great furniture and mattress deals, too. And Star Rewards members earn rewards even faster now during Star Money Bonus Days at Macy's. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh. Can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams, too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Hey everyone, it's Joe Montana. Spreading the word about pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older like me, you're at increased risk. So, what's the game plan? A strong defense. Pneumococcal pneumonia can strike at any time in any season, so you shouldn't wait to help protect yourself. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination today and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Now, back to InfoTrack. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Many barriers are hindering the rural use of government programs, resulting in a shortage of services where they're critically needed. Joining us is Megan Henley, PhD, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. Megan, as we will discuss, there are serious challenges faced by rural residents in accessing government programs. What are some of the top barriers that prevent rural residents from accessing government programs? What would some of those barriers be?
Sure. One thing we did was to try to identify themes that came up in the research. There were three that we tried to consolidate all the existing studies into. And one thing that came up was, you know, when there's any change to the way that these government programs are communicating, obviously that can affect our knowledge of them. So in the past, lots of workers used to learn about programs like their retirement benefits through Social Security at work through their employers. It was just part of an onboarding program in a lot of different places. That's changed. Also, people used to receive benefit statements in the mail, and this has largely been eliminated. So as a result, this really can impact certain groups more than others. And I think when we think about this in a rural context, as we think about the types of places where people work may vary in rural areas versus others.
What about older Americans and people with disabilities? They probably have their own set of obstacles, I would think, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's one thing we were thinking about as well when we were doing this work, is that when we know that rural communities tend to have a higher representation of people who are older and people who have disabilities, this is an overlapping issue. So when we talk about disability-specific issues, we're talking about rural issues and vice versa. And so these are groups of people who are more likely to be eligible for a lot of these programs. So if we're not doing a good job of reaching them, we're not doing a good job overall.
Roughly, what percentage of rural residents lack internet access, or at least good quality internet access?
Broadly speaking, people who live in rural communities are less likely to have broadband internet access, or they're less likely to use computers or use the internet to get materials. So when we think about how we're disseminating information, and if government programs are saying, we'll put these intake forms online, that obviously expands access in a lot of ways, but disproportionately across the country. So that might not be affecting or helping out people in rural communities as much as in other parts of the country.
Are there specific issues faced by homeless veterans and former inmates in rural areas?
Yeah, one thing that came up in our research, we found existing work that talked about how there are some communities of people that are just more difficult to reach for obvious reasons. So people who are homeless, veterans, and homeless veterans as their own distinct group. These are people who might have, obviously, a more difficult time applying for benefits, let alone finding out information about them. So our typical modes of trying to reach the public might not work for them. And some existing work that's been done in this area, there's been pilot studies that are trying to find effective ways of trying to reach these folks. So some solutions that have come up have been, for instance, having a dedicated staff person at an agency who can serve as an expert or a liaison to these groups, or just simply be available for consultation for like more complicated cases. And obviously, this is something that affects certain communities more than others.
Our guest is Megan Henley, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire, and we're talking about barriers hindering the rural use of government programs, and this is causing a shortage of services. Even for those who are not in rural areas, one of the challenges that's often faced is the design of government websites. And the instructions are just not very clear. Is there any way to work on that to make things easier for everybody?
I think one thing that previous research has found is that online websites for a lot of local government websites, state government websites, which are these gateways to the federal programs, they're inconsistent in terms of the information that's available and how accessible they are. So clearly there are federal guidelines on accessibility, and a lot of the federal sites are in compliance. But when people want to find out information about what resources are available to them, they tend to start at the local level. And so if they go there and the sites are not able to serve the purposes they need, that can be a barrier to getting services in the long run. And obviously that disproportionately affects different groups.
Now, we've talked about a few of the services. Do you have some others you could mention other than Social Security, for example? Are there other programs that are widely disseminated that rural people are not getting?
Sure. I mean, when we talk about Social Security also, that includes not just retirement benefits, but things like supplemental security income, Social Security disability insurance. So there's the group of Social Security programs, but then also things that are available, such as, you know, the Women and Children program, SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps. These are all things that people tend to find out about online, need to apply for online or in person in offices. So we kind of speak broadly to all these different types of federal and state level programs.
This digital illiteracy particularly affects older demographics. Can you give us an idea of when we say older, what age are we talking about?
You know, much of the research on the older adult population usually is talking about ages 65 and older. But when we're looking at this in some of the work that we found, that varies. Sometimes they'll go as young as 50, which is not very old. And I think a lot of this tends to be a generational issue, right? So the research that we are summarizing here is really everything that's been published since 2012. So when we're talking about people who are 65 and older in the last 10 years, we're really speaking to a generation that maybe didn't have access to the internet as they were in their working years. And so it may be more of a generational effect.
If I'm an older American who's missing out on some of these services and listening right now, what advice would you have for them to maybe get some of these services or at least connect to them?
I think that the internet is a great source for finding information on the programs that you most need. Traditionally, a lot of people rely on in-person appointments to get their answers to questions. That's not always something that's available to people, as we see particularly in the rural context when offices were shut down, or we learned nationwide during COVID when offices were shut down, there were alternative places to go. So I'd say if a field office is not available and a phone number is not working well because of extended wait times, the online services are a great place, and there's usually a local or state level office that can help people navigate those sites.
Megan Henley, PhD, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Hey, Joe Montana here. Back in my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia, a bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older, or 19 or older with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, you're at increased risk. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Is there a link between higher education and cardiovascular health? One medical expert thinks so. InfoTrack's Roy Mackey brings us this report. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Jared Magnani is a cardiologist from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and associate professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Doctor, you recently led a study that examined how a person's education early in life may affect their cardiovascular health decades down the road. Before we hear the results, what caused you to take a look at this connection in the first place?
My team and I have been interested in the association of social factors in relation to longitudinal risk for cardiovascular disease. And we know that a lot of health behaviors like smoking, physical activity, and diet are very much related to whether or not somebody has a heart attack. But we also would like to ask about whether or not how they live, where they live, might be related to their health outcome as well.
Your study's data included 40,000 men and women, and it spanned 1985 to 2015. Tell us what you found in terms of how education affects later cardiovascular health.
Well, our results were pretty interesting, and we were able to leverage a project which pools data from multiple community-based cohorts, and thereby arriving at that number of over 40,000 individuals. We examined education as categorized by whether or not somebody had graduated from high school to high school, whether they had some college, and whether they were a college graduate, these four categories. And we looked over the course of their lifetime, multiple decades, in the relation of their educational attainment and their cumulative risk of having a heart event. We found that people with lower education, such as those who particularly did not complete high school, were definitely at far increased risk, about 1.4 to 1.7 times those who had graduated from college.
Did you find any significant differences between men and women or differing racial groups?
Our primary analysis did examine men and women differently because we know that men and women have different rates of heart disease, and we did find that results were consistent. It was interesting to see that among women, the results were significantly more than they were with men in terms of the association of education with heart disease. We did look at analyses by race, and we found that there was a difference in terms of a gradient of risk between those of Black and white race. So education is protective in those of any race, but it's more so in those of white race, we found, than in those of Black race. And across the board, the risk of heart disease was higher in our study participants who were of Black race.
You also found an age difference in terms of how early someone may experience one of these health issues. Can you maybe fill in some details there on how early or how big the differences were?
When we looked at whether or not somebody had a heart event, we found that those who were younger were more likely to have a heart event during their lifetime than those who were older. So we looked at those who were age 40 to 59 and onwards, and those who were in the older age group, and found that the younger individuals had a greater risk of heart disease.
What theories do you have as to the reasons behind these differences, both overall and also the significant difference you mentioned between men and women?
I would like us to look at education as a proxy for social and economic status. We know that education is completed pretty early in the course of one's life, but in our study, we found that it had implications for health all the way across the lifespan, multiple decades further. What we know is that those who have higher education have more vocational opportunity and therefore can gain more social resources. And with that comes access to healthcare and also access to intangible things like healthier foods and neighborhoods that are in greater proximity to places where people can engage in recreation, obtain healthier foods, and have less exposures to industrial factors like noise and pollution that longitudinally will also be associated with risk of heart disease.
Do you have any final words, maybe a takeaway message for the average American regarding your findings?
Education is a modifiable risk factor. Think about it. We can invest more in education, particularly after COVID, when we've seen so many disparities in terms of how education was diminished, particularly for higher risk groups, those with social disadvantage. So a program, an intervention early in life that all of us take for granted, by enhancing it, can have health benefits for decades to come.
Dr. Jared Magnani, cardiologist from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
CBS News Brief. There could soon be good news for families of Israeli hostages and the families of Palestinian prisoners. Here's CBS's Imtiaz Tayyab in Tel Aviv.
Israel has agreed to a ceasefire and hostage release framework that would see a 6-week pause in fighting and the release of women, elderly, and sick hostages. Hamas has yet to respond.
Former President Trump has once again confused former President Obama for President Biden.
Putin, you know, has so little respect for Obama that he's starting to throw around the nuclear word today. You heard that, nuclear.
Trump won in Missouri, Michigan, and Idaho last night. Super Tuesday could be the end of the road for Nikki Haley's campaign, says UVA political analyst Larry Sabato.
If she's shut out entirely, I just don't see how she continues, even if her donors want to continue to give her money.
15 states and American Samoa will vote this Tuesday. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
in Iraq. Our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes. And Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed. And we feel it and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
James here, host of the new Sunrise Show on WisCountry 105.5 WIRI. We're on the air live every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m. to start your day right with...
More Garth! More Reba! Winona!
Yeah, but also the National Day of Calendar.
Brooks and Dunn!
Country news.
Brooks and Dunn!
This day in country history and your requests, plus the country legends.
More Garth! More Reba!
That you know and love. It's coffee, conversation, and country. Every weekday from 7 to 8 on 105.5 WIRI, WisCountry.
Winona.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see mostly sunny skies for today. Breezy south winds will increase. Some gusts up around 35 miles per hour. Highs near the 70-degree mark. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 30s. Winds will become light and variable. Monday, rain and lower 50s. Right now, it's 40.
WIRI Nakusa. The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7.
WIRI 105.5 FM, Wisconsin Rapids.
Your bags are packed and waiting by the door. If you really want to go, well, it's all right. Don't worry about me, darling, 'cause I get by. But I'll need someone to hold me when I sit down here beside
Miranda Lambert on Country Legends 24/7.
Country, True Value Country Showdown. Now they're Colgate Country Showdowns. Mm-hmm. I got in the contest and I got third. I was singing on a stage in a bar. That was the contest, was at the Rio Palm Isle in Longview, Texas. And I ended up getting the house gig at that bar when I turned 17. Even though I got third, the owner thought I could sing good and called my mom and said, our singer just quit. Does your daughter want the gig? And I was like, am I old enough to be in here? So my mom went with me a couple of times and they saw that I wasn't like a wild child going to drink underage or whatever. And so I had the gig for four months, three nights a week, 4 hour sets, and made $200. Not enough. But it's where I started to get my chops, you know? It's where I started to realize what all this was about. 105.5 FM.
I know they say you can't go home again. I just had to come back one last time. Ma'am, I know you don't know me from Adam. But these handprints on the front steps are mine. Up those stairs in that little back bedroom is where I did my homework and I learned to play guitar. And I bet you didn't know, under that live oak, my favorite dog is buried in the yard. Nothing but a memory from the house that built me. Mama cut out pictures of houses for years, from Better Homes and Garden Magazine. Plans were drawn on concrete board, nail by nail and board by board. Daddy gave life to Mama's dream.
It's big, it's big, it's big on Country Legends 24/7. Marty Stewart here and Hillbilly Rock.
It comes from Mississippi and down in Alabama, creeping like a fever all across the land. From deep in the Delta on the Louisiana shore, the people got to have it, they want to hear some more. It's a hillbilly.
the drum, playing the guitars like shooting from a gun, keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called the hillbilly rock. Some say it came from Memphis, down in Tennessee, or it drifted in from Georgia about 1953. Just as long as it's greasy, as long as it's fast, as long as it's pumping, honey, it's gonna last. It's a hillbilly rock, beat it with a drum, playing them guitars like shooting from a gun, keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called the hillbilly rock. Just what I mean. The juke joints jumping when that cat goes on. The whole place is shaking. There's a something going on. It's a hillbilly rock, beat it with a drum, playing them guitars like shooting from a gun, keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called a hillbilly rock.
Addicted to steel guitar. Country Legends 24/7 from 105.5 FM.
So I feel so blue, sometimes I wanna die. And so I've got a broken heart, so what? They say that time will heal all wounds in mice and men, and I know that someday I'll forget and love again. But just between you and me, I've got my doubts about it, 'cause just between you and me, you're too much to forget. So I've lost the only girl I ever loved, and so I've never felt so low, so what? I'll just tell myself each time I wanna cry that someday time will dry the teardrops from my eye. But just between you and me, I'm not so sure about it, 'cause just between you and me, too much to forget. You're too much to forget.
Hey, I'm Kix Brooks.
Hi, this is Ronnie Dunn.
Gone before I got home.
outside. But I don't want to think about who's taking her for a ride. And her unpredictability is what I love about her best. But I got to find her quick, before she does something I'll regret. It's kind of like a lost and found in a border town. You're asking about a diamond ring. They just look at you like you've lost your mind. Say they haven't seen a thing. But I know she's been here lately. I can still smell her perfume. Yeah, she gets crazy.
Hey, this is Eddie Raven, and lots more coming up from Country Legends 24/7.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see mostly sunny skies for today. Breezy south winds will increase, some gusts up around 35 miles per hour. Highs near the 70-degree mark. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 30s. Winds will become light and variable. Monday, rain and lower 50s. Right now, it's 40.
My blessing. Once in a while, let me hear from you. If we never meet again before my life is over, I'll leave this world loving you. You can take everything but my memories, for they're good ones and they'll see me through. If we never meet again, I'll love you forever. I'll leave this world loving you. You were mine for a time, and I'm thankful. If we never meet
if we never meet again this side of heaven.
Jones.
But anyhow, you know, when we got our chance to come and do a song on the opera, when I had finally got Why Baby Why going, and that was the biggest thrill, you know, just to see your name in the charts, you know, and people talking about it. And then I found out you can get money for it.
105.5
We're gonna hold on. We're gonna hold on. We're gonna hold on to each other.
Life can be rough. Sometimes it's kind. A real good life is hard to find, but the best love is the one we know, and the faith we have between us makes it grow.
Some love lives and some love don't. We've got the kind of love we brings us happiness all through the day. Nothing can ever make it go away. We're gonna hold on. We're gonna hold on. We're gonna hold.
David,
I'm Howard with the Bellamy Brothers
on Country Legends 24/7.
Here's Crazy from the Heart.
Crazy from
from the heart. Not make it last. I've learned to live without a love that's in the past. But in the night so still, the memories feel so real. They make my blood run cold. You know.
CBS News Brief. We could be a day or two away from a ceasefire in Gaza, says the BBC's Sebastian Usher.
Hamas is reported to have said that an agreement on a truce could be reached within the next 24 to 48 hours. That is, according to a Hamas source quoted in Egyptian media, if Israel agrees to its demands.
A storm that's been pummeling the Sierra Nevadas is moving west, says CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson.
This storm is a huge windmaker, and it's not just causing blizzard conditions in California and Nevada. It's also bringing 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts to the Wasatch in Utah.
This coming Super Tuesday could be the end of Nikki Haley's presidential campaign, says UVA political analyst Larry Sabato.
If anybody was going to make a breakthrough against Donald Trump, they really had to do it right away. And Nikki Haley did turn out to be the strongest of all the opponents, but strongest is relative.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Hey, it's Matt Hildreth with the Forgotten Country Radio Show. Each Sunday, Drew Morgan and I discuss and play our favorite Forgotten Country songs, everything from George Jones to Johnny Cash and Casey Musgraves and everything in between. So be sure to tune in right here on 105.5 WIRI Wiscountry.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see mostly sunny skies for today. Breezy south winds will increase, some gusts up around 35 miles per hour, highs near the 70-degree mark. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 30s. Winds will become light and variable. Monday, rain and lower 50s. Right now, it's 40.
WIRI Nakusa. The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7. WIRI.